Chapter 21. A Jade Seal's Price. At multiple times in his life, Rick had thought he was surrounded by luxury. Some of the earliest times, when he had barely made it out of his family's trailer park, were a bit embarrassing now that he thought back to them. Other times, he was correct in a limited sense, as when he'd entered the buildings of some of the largest firms. Yet now, as he walked into the palace, he realized that this was a display of wealth like he'd never seen before. There was nothing ostentatious because they had absolutely nothing to prove to anyone. He walked on ancient marble, past walls of rich cedar paneling, all of it thoroughly enchanted with ether. When there was a statue or a tapestry, he had no doubt that they were invaluable originals, not copies. Somehow he had imagined that immortals lived like celebrities, but now he understood how wrong he was. A set of attendants funneled everyone entering into a central raised chamber, which prevented him from wandering through what was no doubt a huge estate. There, Rick found himself slightly overwhelmed by a room absolutely filled with fighters. He didn't see a single untrained person, even the waiters carrying drinks having six-figure generation rates. Almost everyone else looked like they belonged, like they were actually comfortable there. Most were wearing the same formal robes he was, but those who weren't looked far more comfortable than he did. Whether the outdated clothing of Josiah or H's scruffy look, they didn't have a single care for what anyone thought of them. Rick felt completely out of place and was sure he looked like it. "Hey, Rick!" Ragest pushed out of the crowd, grinning. He was wearing robes but hadn't even bothered to tie his belt. "Did you just get here? It's pretty boring. I thought that immortals would have all kinds of amazing training rooms, but they won't let us into that part." "Earlier?" Rick had to swallow to wet his throat, and was surprised when a waiter handed him a glass of what looked like wine. "Have you been here long? Is there going to be any kind of conflict?" "Oh, I wish. No, everyone just wants to talk. I can totally see why Alder didn't bother coming along, but at least we have a chance to meet all our rivals."
"Rivals?"
"The others who are going to be in the big fight tournament thing, of course. They didn't tell you? The immortals are resolving some kind of conflict indirectly by having us fight. The showdown 3 days ago was just like the first round. Now we all get months to prepare and see if we can do better."
"Huh." Rick took a sip from the glass and found it surprisingly sweet, but decided not to drink anymore. "So it isn't scheduled yet?"
"Not yet, but I'll see you there."
Ragest grinned and hit him on the shoulder.
"You did pretty great in that match. I figured the medics would have to drag you out, but you actually survived a beam. I mean, I can do a bit worse than that, but even the weakest version is nothing to joke about. I'm really glad we met in Branton. You might be a rival for real."
Rick really had no idea what to say to that, but at that moment he was pulled aside. H gestured for him to follow and headed deeper into the party. Once they were away from Ragest, H spoke in a low voice.
"Josiah insisted on everyone being introduced. I don't like it, but it's not my choice. That's the only important thing you'll do this party. After that, just don't make a fool of yourself."
"How about I just keep my mouth shut?"
"Good plan."
H took him to a gathering circle containing a number of both fighters and immortals. Rick immediately saw James Travis, who gave him an unpleasant smile. The conversation was idle, but Rick quickly figured out that all the young fighters were those who were part of the immortals' bet and decided to look over his competition. It seemed that each of the major powers was represented. A huge blonde man carrying a lance was likely from Siberia, a woman whose age he couldn't determine represented China, and the thin man in traditional Nokan robes could not be easier to identify. From the conversation, he gleaned that James was from England, but representing Germany and Europe. Several of them seemed to scorn the USA, though he held his tongue instead of pointing out that it was represented by two different people. That meant that other than Rick, Alger was behind the only representative from the U.S. Maybe this was just an idle bet between immortals that meant nothing on the global stage, but that fact left Rick just a little uncomfortable. Eventually, Ragest joined them, which only made the conversation more awkward due to his singular focus. It did take some attention off him, at least.
"What a fine collection of lads and lasses!"
Josiah entered the conversation, joining them with a wine glass in one hand. Rick automatically tensed.
"But you there, lad, dark of countenance, who do you represent?"
I was born in the World Sculptor's Court.
The Noken representative spoke with a sharp accent, apparently not offended by the blunt question.
Ah, good show, then. You will forgive me my prejudice, but you must know how many savages surround the Noken Empire.
It has been our battle since time immemorial.
The Noken man's tone was impossible to read. Not that Rick thought he was great at reading people, but the man struck him as unreadable by anyone. His words could have been sincere, mocking, or bitter, and Rick would have believed it. Even if the Noken man wasn't offended, several of the other representatives were clearly taken aback by Josiah wildly throwing out stereotypes. It would only be a matter of time before James or someone else linked the two of them, and Rick did not want to be in a position where he was trapped between insulting his sponsor and defending whatever outdated thing he said next. As soon as he got an opportunity, he slipped away from the group. He'd seen his rivals now, though Rick felt no real animosity toward anyone but James. And honestly, even that vendetta was entirely one-sided. This wasn't his bet, after all. He was just a tool. His job was to try to gain as much as he could in the process. Still, he felt just as uncomfortable everywhere else in the party. Rick wandered away from the central room, hoping to find a path that wasn't blocked off. To his surprise, he soon stumbled across a garden. The region nearest the main building was exquisitely kept, with perfect paths winding around several pagodas and a lake. There were people walking or seated there, but he saw fewer in the distance. Once he got to the other side of the lake, Rick found that it was far quieter. No one was trying to talk to him now, but he also saw no sign that he shouldn't be there. After setting down his wine glass, still mostly untouched, Rick stretched a bit and just stared skyward. Honestly, the wine didn't tempt him because part of him just wanted to drink more formula tea. He had resisted taking the extra dose, but it was burning a hole in his inner robe pocket. His plan had been to take it if things went bad and his life was at stake, or at least that was what he told himself. Rick rubbed the vial through his robe, then continued wandering. An enormous dog emerged from the garden ahead of him. Its head came up to his chest, and the rest of it was huge, bulky with muscle and fur so dark it was more blue than black. Though he didn't know the breed, he thought it looked similar to a Tibetan Mastiff. He could only just see its eyes through the fluff, but they glittered darkly at him. Rick decided it was best to walk away before it could become aggressive. Maybe he wasn't supposed to be there after all. He took several steps backward, only to have the dog shuffle forward, closing the distance. His first instinct was to defend himself, but Rick realized a moment later that it was obviously a pet. Aside from the fact that a place this fancy wouldn't have wild animals roaming around, its fur had clearly been well-groomed. That meant that it was owned by their hosts, and they wouldn't take kindly to him touching a hair on its body, much less killing it. Instead, Rick turned away to run back to the party, only to find the dog rushing in front of him. There had been so many powerful people at the party that Rick had stopped thinking too much about anyone's generation rate. Yet now he realized that his instincts weren't failing him. The dog was holding lucrum. Unless he'd gone mad, it had over 6 digits of lucrum, roughly 225,000. Was a dog stronger than him? Taken off guard, Rick decided to escape as quickly as possible and find the attendants. He used a bunion step to leap partway across the pond, where he could chain several more together and reach the main party. The dog let out a loud bark, and then suddenly it was blurring in front of him. Unsettled, Rick tried to bunion step in another direction, only for the dog to cut him off again. Impossible as it seemed, it wasn't just using raw lucrum or aura like the animals at the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. It was using a technique. Its jaws opened, revealing a maw filled with large teeth, drool beginning to roll down. Panicking, Rick used another bunion step to shoot over the dog's head, then changed direction in midair. That bought him a moment of freedom, but suddenly it flashed in front of him again, barking loudly. Rick desperately used several more bunion steps, but each time he caught a glimpse of dark fur in front of him. Eventually, his core was burning out, and the dog was almost on him. Crouching low to the ground, it began wagging its tail fiercely.
Playing? Rick faked moving in one direction, but used his new footwork to cut off the movement. The dog partially leapt to block him, let out a happy woof, then hopped back. As they faked back and forth in several directions, Rick found himself smiling. When the dog came forward, he didn't retreat. Though its jaws could probably tear off an arm, even without Lucrum, it merely bumped its head against his chest in a friendly way and then licked his cheek. Rick automatically raised a hand to rub its head, then hesitated. It was clearly a pet, so perhaps touching it would be unwise.
He likes if you scratch behind his left ear.
He recognized the soft voice as the elderly Chinese woman who had granted him the seal. The dog did too, apparently, woofing happily at her. I hope it's okay that I played with him, Rick said, scratching the dog behind the ear. It leaned into his hand and let its tongue loll from its mouth.
It's probably good for him. Too many strangers cause him stress, so he's happy to have someone to play with.
I'm sorry, but I don't believe I've ever caught your name.
You may call me Ching Shan.
Something about that name and the way she said it made him hesitate. He didn't recognize it, at least not consciously, but it might not be her real name. In any case, it was still a token of trust, so he inclined his head to her. Thank you for your seal. I hope you don't regret it, now that I'm part of the bet.
Oh, these bets are never simple things. I would not concern yourself over it.
Ching Shan stepped closer, stood silently for a time, then placed a hand on the dog's back.
He also enjoys being thrown, since relatively few have the strength and the nerve.
Thrown? Rick glanced at the huge dog dubiously, and it nuzzled at his hand. Yes, it was huge, but it was true that his strength was vastly increased with Lucrum. Since the woman had clearly made a suggestion, he decided to try it, bending down to pick up the dog. It immediately began to climb up into his arms, as if it was a tiny lapdog. Rick chuckled as it licked at his face, struggling just to get a solid grip. Eventually, he managed it, then heaved, sending the dog sailing through the air into the empty part of the garden. For a moment, he worried that the dog would hit something and he would be in trouble, but it flipped around in the air to land on its feet. Then it charged. Rick's eyes widened as he saw the dog streaking toward him like a freight train. His instincts screamed to leap out of the way, but he braced his feet, summoned the triune golden spheres, and let it collide with his chest. So much weight slamming into him sent him staggering back several steps, but it hadn't been an attack. Enough to kill most people, but the dog was still just playing. It scrabbled at him, licking his face while he tried to get a better grip. After it let out a deafening bark into his face, Rick was fairly clear on what it wanted. The second time, he threw the dog as hard as he could, sending it sailing so deep into the garden that it was lost in the trees. Rick heard a thump, then a rustling, then had to brace himself as a blue-black streak came for him. After throwing the dog several times, it only seemed more eager, but Rick was starting to feel a bit tired. Fortunately, before he needed to make an awkward decision, Ching Shan uttered a single word in Chinese. The dog immediately dropped down onto all fours beside her, body completely still except its mouth, which panted in a doggish grin.
Some laugh at the idea that animals can be good judges of character, but I have always found it useful.
Ching Shan scratched the dog on the head and then began to walk deeper into the garden.
He clearly likes you. We should talk.
That sounded ominous, but he had no real choice but to follow. Since she didn't immediately ask him anything as they walked, Rick searched for a question to fill the silence. I've never seen an animal with this much lucrum.
Yes, I noted that you had experience with wild animals.
As they walked, Ching Shan kept her hand resting on the dog's fur.
The stories are filled with mystical creatures, but they are later inventions. The truth is, the way that humans use lucrum is not natural, not in the sense of evolution. It is ultimately technology, allowing us to use natural lucrum in ways that far surpass any animals.
Perhaps for you, but this dog here definitely surpasses me.
Ah, but I meant wild animals. Dogs have been our companions for millennia, likely raised from the Ora wolves. They have been bred for a great many purposes, including, at times, effective use of lucrum. This one is a companion and guardian, but others are bred as true war dogs. Though never equal to the strongest warriors, they are the best companions a human could ask for.
What about cats? Rick asked. To his surprise, Ching Shan immediately sniffed.
Cats should never be bred to use Lucrim.
You don't like cats?
I like them well enough, but if they gain that much power, they will kill people.
Ching Shan smiled warmly and ruffled her hand through the fluff on the dog's head.
Not like our good boy here. Such a loyal beast. Yes, you are.
She continued praising it in Chinese, her content obvious from her tone, and the dog woofed happily. Seeing her speaking to the dog so casually made Rick relax a little. That immediately made him suspicious, wondering if she was manipulating him. Even monsters loved their dogs, after all. But whatever else was the case, he thought her affection for the dog was genuine, and she had twice helped him. As they approached a pagoda separate from the others, Rick decided to ask another question. Other animals can do things that we can't, right? I thought some of the most lethal lucrum-based poisons couldn't be replicated even in labs.
Oh, the natural world has produced a great many wonders.
Ching Shan waved the issue aside, her face suddenly serious. She took a seat inside the pagoda and gestured for him to sit as well, the dog already placing itself over their feet.
But I did not call you here to discuss science lessons.
Rick swallowed. Why then?
Truth be told, I gave you the original seal for one primary reason, to disrupt Alger. Your performance was adequate, yes, otherwise I would not have bothered. But what concerned me most was his interest in you. Minor investigation into your past has revealed nothing of note, however.
Well, that's because I'm not really anyone of note. Alger just likes people he says have a warrior's spirit.
Actually, I lied.
Ching Shan gave him a narrow smile.
There is one notable thing. It seems that you've nearly been involved with Alger several times, but always escaped his orbit. That is unusual. His proteges tend to be like Ragast, overflowing with power and lacking in questions.
Just how many have there been?
I couldn't tell you. The man seems capable of accomplishing so much at once that some have speculated that he has an entire organization of agents, yet he seems to work alone. What I can tell you is that those he trains tend to have short and explosive careers, but they don't end well. Some of them have simply disappeared, and all evidence points to their deaths.
I knew something was off about him, but I didn't know anything about that. It was insane to think that Alger, the wackily dressed man who had welcomed him to the underground, could be someone so notorious. But if you want me to tell you about him, I'm afraid I don't know much of anything.
A pity. I suspected as much, but it was worth asking.
Ching Shan regarded him coolly, the weight of her gaze making him wonder if she was even older than she appeared. Immortals usually adopted a young appearance, but perhaps...
Because Alger seems to care about this little bet, we care as well. One of my younger sect sisters is actually participating, but I am less concerned about that than in making sure that it ends well.
What would that look like?
Alger's candidate not winning, of course. We would take a victory, but truthfully, a Nokan or Siberian victory would be equally satisfactory.
Rick waited a moment longer, but she didn't say anything about him, and it obviously wasn't an accident. But you don't want me to win.
I would weep no tears if you did. But this H who trains you has a poor reputation for breaking those he trains, and we are unclear on who he serves. Anyone with unclear loyalties is suspect.
It isn't Josiah Craw. Ching Shan was silent for a time, staring out into the garden.
Josiah Craw hired H, and we don't know why. He has always been an eccentric, but it has been some decades since he participated in any such contests. My master believes that he must know something we don't about the contest, perhaps some reward or consequence.
Though Rick was curious who Ching Shan's master could be, the cool look in her eyes suggested this was not the time to ask questions. After a long pause, she continued.
I would not ask you to be a spy, at least in part because I believe it would be ineffective. But for this moment, you have deniability. Any information you can give us would be useful.
So that's what it was all about. Rick considered carefully,
since it was entirely possible that he was handing intelligence to his enemies. But Ching Shan had actually stood up for him first before H had stepped in. Telling them a little wouldn't hurt. "First," Rick said carefully, "I think that you might want to know that Alger was meeting with the Global Lucrum Authority." He went on to tell what details he could, focusing on Alger since he didn't want to betray H directly. Still, the rumor that had been mentioned, even if it was meant to make him distrust H, Rick had to admit that he had other reasons to distrust the man. When he finished, Ching Shan nodded slowly.
"Anything else?"
"Well, there's this. It might be proprietary, but..." Rick reached into his robe and revealed the vial, but to his surprise, Ching Shan immediately waved it aside.
"Formula T? Perhaps a secret for most, but a known quantity to us. You are taking a great risk in using it, but I suppose you can make your own decisions."
"Huh." Rick hadn't expected it to matter so little, but didn't quite want to let it go. He had an impulse to drink it, and that was what pushed him over the edge. "Could you send this to someone? Secretly, I mean, without H or Alger tracking it."
"It's within our capabilities. Why?"
"There's a woman I know who does this sort of thing professionally. I think she would like to see this. I've been meaning to send it to her, but I've never had a real opportunity." An odd smile played on Ching Shan's face, but she reached out and took the vial from him.
"That is a small favor to grant, after you have been so helpful. Yes, give us the address and we can send it to her."
Rick did so, handing over the vial with only a little regret. The night had gone in several different directions he never would have expected, but he thought this was a good result. Though he hadn't spoken to Lisa enough due to the recent chaos, he knew she would enjoy studying the Formula T. Before he could wander far into his thoughts, Ching Shan rose to her feet.
"After this, we will not contact you. Compete in the showdown, prepare for the final contest, and do whatever benefits you personally. However, please keep in mind what I said. If Alger was interested in you once, he may still be. Believe me when I say that his concern for your well-being is more harmful than our self-interest."
With that, she swept away without a farewell. Rick was left thinking about everything that had happened. He still tried to tell himself that everything was great, since he was still being paid to train and had gotten through the crisis period. That was little comfort when an experienced immortal was expressing so much discomfort. It was hard to know what to do. An enormous head dropped into his lap, and the dog huffed eagerly. Rick smiled and rubbed it behind the ear. Well, there was one thing he could do. Chapter 22. Intermittent Conversations. Rick spent the rest of the party avoiding human interaction in whatever ways were available. Though the dog clearly would have been happy to sit or play with him forever, as time wore on, Rick realized that he would need to connect with his mentor and sponsor again. He didn't want to find out what would happen if Josiah Craw became truly impatient. So he did a feeble imitation of socializing. Though he avoided the drinks, some of the food was amazingly good. He got the sense that there were serious politics going on among the immortals, but he was also aware that he was a piece, not a player. Even the immortals here were in the grip of larger social systems and bounds of propriety. It wasn't a life he wanted, just something he was sampling in an effort to take himself upward. Toward the end of the party, one of the palace aides came and requested his showdown card. Rick was skeptical for a moment, but he'd seen how the lives of the wealthy relied on certain assumptions of trust, and it wasn't like the card itself had great value. So he handed over the card and tried not to think about it, even though it wasn't returned at the end. Eventually, H showed up beside him and jerked his head toward the door. Josiah was saying farewell to some of their hosts, kissing the hands of all the women and vigorously shaking those of the men. Though Rick had been evading eye contact, when he looked up, he saw several lanterns floating overhead, ferrying guests back to their homes. Or the closest thing they had to homes if they were competitors. They were escorted back to their lantern by a young man, and Rick found himself a bit disappointed that it wasn't the woman from before. He immediately kicked himself. She had been nothing but professional. It was just him getting distracted. Much of the time, he could sink all other thoughts into training, but when he had to be around other people, sometimes other thoughts wormed their way to the surface. Perhaps a reason to do more training then.
Quite a bash, eh?
Josiah sat back and laced his fingers over his coats with a look of deep satisfaction.
I've always said it. The Orientals know how to host a man. They also usually have the decency not to allow lesser types into such functions. All very respectable. Even that Siberian fellow was a gentleman in the end.
H and Rick didn't say anything, nodding like bobbleheads.
Ah, but on that subject, it is time to give you the fruits of your labor.
Josiah reached into a pocket and revealed a card that he passed on to Rick.
I hadn't yet given you my stamp of approval, since this was all so irregular, but you seem an able young lad, and you did something right, because our hosts gave you a seal of their own. Two in one day, eh? Not bad for a night of amusements.
Thank you, sir. Rick took the card and examined the new seals. One of them looked to be of the same shining ink as the first jade seal, but this one had an elaborate pair of characters. Though he couldn't read them, he thought they were familiar from some of the art he'd seen throughout the house. By contrast, the other seal was a metallic coat of arms with a tiny assortment of symbols he couldn't make out. They were silent for a while. Then Josiah began rambling in praise of their hosts again. It went on for a short time before H coughed slightly.
Master Craw, perhaps we should discuss our plans.
Oh, yes, I suppose.
Josiah turned toward Rick and regarded him seriously.
I know that a vigorous young man like yourself must be eager to participate in the showdown, but this competition between myself and my chums really is the higher priority.
Has a date been set? H asked.
Not at the moment, so you have at least some months. Those are your instructions, man. Keep him in the showdown and prepare him for the fight to come. We have yet to decide on the terms or venue, so you must be prepared for everything. I expect to see verve from you, lad. Verve and vigor.
When they returned to Odiyu, Rick was gladder to see the demonic city than he'd thought possible. Josiah left him with a crushing handshake and left in his flying Model T, careening out at a frankly terrifying rate. If he passed over any urban areas on his way home, the chance of an accident seemed quite high. Apparently, the party's length had been entirely predictable, because by the time they reached the road, a taxi had pulled up waiting for them. H was oddly silent as they entered, but when they started back to the hotel, Rick looked over at him and smiled. Horatio, is it?
Oh, don't start.
H lit up a cigarette, then glared down the taxi driver when the man objected.
My parents were involved in these circles, and they thought Horatio was a very modern-sounding name.
You could just change it, or tell people to call you anything you want.
Could, but we are what we are. Have you gotten the jokes out of your system yet?
Actually, I wanted to talk about training. Rick settled into his seat and tried to get back into the proper mindset. Are you really going to pull me out of the showdown to focus on the fight? I know we have a lot to work on, but that seems... I mean, at minimum, you wouldn't be earning any money off me, right? H puffed on his cigarette for a time, then slowly shook his head.
If I get my proper payment from this, it will make up for the rest. But you're not getting any bonuses for seals earned through parties, only from winning. What would be best is to focus on your lucrum growth. We won't worry about winning money or earning seals. Three is plenty for someone who's only been doing this for a few months. I'll put you into events when they'll test you in the right way.
That sounds like a good plan to me. Are we going to participate in the rest of the showdown in Odiyu?
No, you've already shown all your tricks. No point trying to place in the remaining events. Better to use that time to prepare for the next one.
All right, where are we going next?
New Zealand.
H saw his surprised expression and shrugged.
For a little island, they've had more impact on the world than most. They have a dragon weight, and Australia doesn't. Go figure.
It's still not a very big country, right?
Yeah, that means that the showdown won't be huge there, including the prizes. You should still encounter some local lucors, because they have a few tricks your defensive corps needs to experience, but it should give you a month to train.
Rick was mostly glad to hear that, but his mind rolled onward. And after that is Siberia. H nodded, but said nothing for a while. Eventually, he finished his cigarette, ground it up in one hand, and then looked back to Rick.
You might have managed so far, but your stubbornness over the demonic bond issue is still a major flaw. Your training will be useless if you won't help yourself.
I'm trying to set up something with my demonic contacts. Or so he hoped. They'll be in Siberia. Don't put me in any events too quickly, and I should be able to get it worked out.
I hope so, because you won't be able to sit out Siberia. Their champion will want to test you directly, and they don't have the same laws about personal injury there. If you don't have the power to back up this attitude, you'll pay for it.
Something else to look forward to. Rick sat back and closed his eyes, because he knew he wouldn't get much time to rest. Though Rick had harbored hopes of returning to the demonic side of Odiyu, both to explore it further and to contact Buffgage and Yissel, H insisted that leaving would be too great an opportunity for spying from other groups. Rick didn't see the point when he'd be showing his training in public in the next showdown, but he accepted it since he was interested in training anyway. After some time correcting errors his hasty training had created, H focused primarily on teaching him something new that seemed completely inexplicable. It was all Lucrum constructions that Rick hadn't seen before and sometimes frankly baffled him. He could tell that they involved transferring energy, and obviously they would be the basis for another Lucor, but beyond that, he was clueless. H seemed aggravated by his slow progress, but told him to simply keep at it. Though it was easy to sink back into his training, it was again texts from Melissa that pulled him out of it. As soon as possible, they arranged another video chat. He saw that she was wearing a new jacket, and as always, she looked healthier than before.
Too busy to talk, Mr. McBigpants?
She raised an eyebrow at him, and he chuckled. Sorry, it's been busy, but how does having big pants relate?
You know, the saying about people getting too big for their... Well, I guess that's the opposite. Okay, here's how it goes. Your pants are getting so large that they're covering your mouth. This also causes you to change your name to Leroy McBigpants.
Knowing better than to question further, Rick just smiled and changed the subject. How have things been in the YLAA? I read a little online about you guys going on some sort of field trip.
No, that's still coming up.
Melissa leaned back in her chair and smiled.
We're going to Europe, and I'm actually looking forward to it. Supposedly, we'll be meeting our European equivalents. You can get camp for Aus Europa or something. But I think it's really an excuse to travel around. But I'm glad we'll be doing it, since I worry you're going to come back all worldly and experienced.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I've been learning so much, I'm losing the ability to speak English. If you can't speak 7 new languages by the time I get back, we can't be siblings anymore.
Don't be silly, brother. How are you going to learn that many new languages when you have a different girlfriend in every city?
That actually did bring up a current frustration, but it really didn't matter while he was talking to Melissa. How do you think I'm learning them all? Pillow Talk is the best instructor.
Ew!
Melissa pretended to slap her hands to her face in horror.
Don't scandalize my sensitive ears.
I seem to recall your sensitive ears making some pretty suggestive movements. Wait, fuck, that doesn't work.
The ability of my ears to speak is well known, legendary even.
Rick gave up trying to say anything clever, even by their silly standards, and just grinned at her. But really, how are things going with you? They talked about everything, going longer than usual. Rick began doing his exercises subconsciously and was surprised to note that Melissa seemed to be doing the same thing. Hers involved more lights dimming and dark flames licking up around her, but neither of them paid it any mind. When it really got too late on her end, Melissa glanced at her wrist, which did not hold a watch, and sighed.
I guess we have to stop soon. Look at the time and all that. Part of the reason I wanted to do this now is that we might not have so much time during the European tour. But after that, I was wondering if there was any way we could actually get together, in person.
I'd like that, but would it work? I'm never sure where we're headed next.
Use the gosh darn website, Rick. They post all this stuff way in advance.
Yeah, you're right, but I'm pretty sure we'll only visit the U.S. rarely, and we likely won't be anywhere near you. I wouldn't mind you coming to watch a showdown sometime, but it's really not as exciting as you'd think. A few intense events, sure, but most of the time we're training.
But that leaves us more time to do nothing, which is the point.
Melissa slid forward and fiddled with something off the edge of the camera.
Actually, I had something else in mind. After the European tour, We get a month off as a break. Most of the other YLAA people are going to go to their summer lake houses or dress up horses all fancy or whatever they do. It's like they didn't even think that someone might not have a home to go back to.
Rick winced, but he wasn't surprised. Yeah, shit like that happens. So, from what you said, you're thinking of trying to come wherever I am?
Yeah. I mean, if it's possible. I figured that I'd already be in Europe, so there's a good chance it'd be cheaper to fly to wherever you are.
I'd have to talk to H about whether you could come here. He wouldn't like it, but I might be able to convince him. Or, Rick had been checking the website while they spoke and seeing how the exact months lined up. I'll be in Southeast Asia, and the showdown that month won't be so important. What if we flew to see Uncle Frank? Melissa perked up and clapped her hands.
That's a great idea. He is still over there, right? We'll need to get him somehow and ask, but surely we can make it work somehow.
I don't know if I can get permission, and you should check to see if the flights are too much. But yeah, let's try. They said a few other farewells, but the call ended on that happy note. Even though it was an idea that had come up on the spur of the moment, Rick found himself fixating on it surprisingly quickly. It had been years since they'd seen Uncle Frank in person. Unless his perpetually busy work made it entirely impossible, it would be fun to visit him and see what he did. As they prepared to leave China, Rick's training had progressed further, but became no more comprehensible. All the formula tea he drank went into strengthening his defensive sphere, leaving the empty ones conspicuously empty. He thought that he could feel the imbalance in his lucrimasole every time he used the triune golden spheres. H was gone more often with other business, but implied that they would begin the next step of training when they reached New Zealand. With that in mind, Rick focused more on his original cores. They might not be exploding in strength like the spheres, but he still relied on them in every fight. With his mind fully focused on the next step of their trip, he was actually surprised to receive a call from Lisa. He'd nearly forgotten about sending her the sample of formula T. Come to think of it, he was surprised that she hadn't sent him a message about receiving it. Had Qingshan simply stolen it after all? When Lisa appeared on his screen, however, she was smiling.
Hello, Rick.
Hey. He was suddenly self-conscious of the fact that he was filthy with sweat and was glad that she couldn't smell him through the camera. Nice to hear from you.
I got your gift. It was nice. Actually, a little too nice. It made things awkward for a bit with Nathan until I explained about it being for my work.
Nathan? He immediately felt like an idiot for asking, since obviously it was her boyfriend. Lisa also looked awkward and tried to brush it aside.
Boyfriend, but never mind that. I don't know why I even mentioned that. It's not a problem, really.
Actually, I'm not sure what's going on. I thought you might find the formula T interesting, but you're talking about it like it was a way better gift than I thought. Lisa gave him a strange look, then bent down off camera. When she rose back up, she was holding a case about the size of a shoebox. It couldn't have been further from a shoebox otherwise, a ceramic case covered in Chinese calligraphy. Rick blinked in confusion. Ah, I didn't send you that much. I guess they threw in something else as a bonus.
Well, I'm not complaining.
Lisa opened the case, and he saw that the interior had several trays of plush velvet. There were many notches, some filled with pills, but he presumed that the others had once been filled as well.
If you were really dealing with immortals, this was probably a trivial cast-off to them, like a party favor or something. But the chance to work directly with so many rare materials has been amazing.
She went on to talk about them in detail, and Rick found himself smiling at her passion for the subject. For a while, he'd been worried that things had gone wrong, but it seemed sending it to her had been the right idea, except for the central issue, which he managed to bring up once she finished. You did get the formula T, right?
Yes, that was included.
Lisa's smile faded as she raised the familiar vial, still mostly full.
I'm not your mother, and I don't want to lecture you, but be careful with this, Rick. I couldn't find any direct information, either online or in any of the databases I have paid access to. But from basic testing, the concentration of lucrum in this is quite high.
I know. They have me taking a lot of precautions, but I can easily imagine how bad this would be for a power addict.
Can you tell me how exactly you take it? Melissa also mentioned something about a special formulation that healed you, and that threw me for a loop, so I'd like to understand better.
The fact that the two of them had conversations about him was news to Rick, but he pushed it aside and explained about the schedule of taking it every 8 hours. Lisa's expression darkened, though she didn't say anything, so he added every other detail he could. When he finally finished, she stared down at the vial for a time before speaking quietly.
I think I should do some more tests on this. The risk, well, we've already talked about that. I really, truly don't want to lecture.
I'm glad you're taking the time, Lisa. Rick made sure to smile until she looked up enough to meet his gaze. And if you have any warnings for me, I'll listen to them, honest. I've blundered into too many problems to think my foresight is all that great. That got a slight smile from her.
Do you really still want some of my serum? With everything you're taking, and the way I never got an address.
No, I actually want it. Things were just crazy for a while, and it looked like I might get kicked out of the showdown. But I'm going to New Zealand next, actually in a few days. I don't know exactly where we'll be staying, but I know the city, so I'll get you an address.
There was a risk of being kicked out.
Apparently, Melissa hadn't told her everything. Rick explained some of his recent troubles, but felt awkward talking so much about himself. He turned the conversation back to her business, deciding it might be safer to keep things professional. As Lisa spoke, however, he found himself surprised by the parallels. She was also interested in developing a perpetual soul, though in her case it was more so that she could refine materials and create ether without it being a drain on her. Rick was no expert, but it seemed like she had good ideas. Maybe she wasn't crafting world-class supplements yet, but hopefully the chance to work with everything he had sent her would help. When the call ended, Rick was left smiling and sad. He closed the laptop and dropped onto the bed, staring at the ceiling. It was easier not to think about that. Tomorrow, he'd be off to yet another new country to begin all over again. Chapter 23. Completing the Spheres. Rick enjoyed the vistas of New Zealand while their helicopter flew in, then barely at all for the next several days. They might not be in a hotel this time, but the remote training facility had all the same facilities. It was like traveling the world and seeing nothing but hotel rooms. Though he wanted to get a chance to experience more of the country, he also knew that he needed to focus on training. As soon as they arrived, H started him with a singular focus on the energy rerouting techniques that Rick couldn't crack. He could master the basics, but there was always a more difficult version, and he still didn't know the purpose of all of it. Still, it was obvious that this was the second Lucor in the Triune Golden Spheres, so he gave it his full attention.
"Let's try this with something on the line," H spoke without preamble when he walked in one day, throwing a glass orb at him. "Hold that, and attempt the same technique. You'll figure it out under fire. The burns can be motivation."
"The burns?" Rick cut off as H raised a hand and suddenly shot a burning ember at him. He tried to block on instinct, ignoring the orb. It hit his forearm without any impact, but then he began to feel it burning into him. Rick cried out and clamped his hand down on it automatically, only for his hand to burn as well. Gritting his teeth, he drew up his defensive core and managed to smother it. The attack must have been based purely on aura, because it left his sleeve untouched, but he could feel a burn on his arm underneath. Whatever it was fairly dangerous, and there was another one coming at him. This time Rick thrust forth the orb, desperately trying to repeat the technique he'd been struggling with. The ember hit the orb, burned for a time, then winked out. Across from him, H shook his head.
"That isn't the purpose of the exercise. Do you see now? You need to draw the foreign energy into the core of the technique. It's a whirlpool, just like I showed you. The orb is at the center, and it draws everything in."
Another ember was coming at him, so Rick resisted the urge to block or dodge. Instead, he focused entirely on his technique, even when the ember burned into his chest. Another came after it, and another. But as the pain spread through his chest, Rick suddenly felt something click. Most of his techniques were like flexing a new muscle, but this was like seeing the world from a new angle. The last ember shifted in the air and came to rest in the center of the orb without touching him. Having felt it work, Rick finally understood how the technique was supposed to operate. He looked up and smiled. I see now. It's like another ember hit him in the face. Rick cursed and focused on the technique again. He was only able to redirect 1 in 10 at first, but by the time he was aching too badly to continue, he was redirecting 1 ember in 5. They continued to burn in the center of the glass orb until he let it go, when they promptly all winked out.
Putting pressure on you seems to be the right choice.
H folded his arms and scowled approvingly.
You get part of the afternoon off. Have another dose of formula T as a reward. You may have a bit of trouble recovering anyway.
For me, it wasn't like a whirlpool, Rick said. Between all the painful hits, he'd had enough time to think it through. That implies using force to move the attacks, but that got me using physical force. Instead, I thought about it like the orb was a black hole. It doesn't suck in anything. It's the force of gravity that draws the aura.
Huh. That's actually closer to how it truly works.
H regarded him, then nodded as if confirming something to himself.
But I hope you've seen the weakness. It will only work against aura. This technique is completely useless against raw lucrum, a physical blow, or anything ether enchanted.
But most ranged attacks are based on aura. I completely get how useful it could be. Rick tossed the glass orb between his hands. I assume this is a teaching tool, but I'll do my best to master the actual version.
You'd better. We're behind schedule.
H directed him to sit down and showed him how to tweak the technique he'd been practicing. Then, given an infusion of lucrum from Philosopher's Elixir, he began gathering all the power into the second of the crystal spheres. Unfortunately, he failed to get the initial spark of the lucor started 3 times before H told him to try again once he was rested.
The defensive core came easily for you, H said, but this is your weakness. You're too used to beating things with your fists. Normally, we'd focus on this technique until you'd built up a basic core, but there's not enough time for that. We'll have to begin developing the third technique as well.
That's the sensory one.
Correct. And it's likely to be difficult for you, because this isn't exactly a common technique. Put aside everything you know about sensing lucrum in modern portfolios. Instead, let your aura grow still and use it to feel the movements of lucrum in others, not yourself.
Rick closed his eyes and attempted to do so. Some of the exercises H had been forcing him to do were clearly preparation for this, and now that he understood their purpose, they came easier. It felt like he had his eyes closed for an hour, but eventually he began to feel his aura thrumming in response to his environment. Disappointingly weak, but after trying several times, he had to give up. When he opened his eyes, he saw H staring at him. A moment later, the other man returned to glowering.
That was too fast. Has someone been teaching you on the side?
No, it's because I've done this before. Rick raised his hands across from each other and let aura flow through them, as he had so many times before while working for the Global Lucrum Authority. They had to search out lucrum anomalies this way. I figured the technique would never be useful for anything else, but I guess it isn't so archaic after all.
Guess not.
H had completely recovered from his surprise and tossed the third crystal sphere to him.
Try to get this lucor started if you can. You already understand the basics. It's just that you want the lucor to react to the environment, not you. We'll worry about connecting it to your senses later.
That was a bit trickier than it sounded. Rick's first workable attempt failed, but he managed to get it on the second. He lifted the sphere with his aura and put the others along with it. One brightly glowing sphere, one with a seed of a lucor, and one still empty. It was progress. As he attempted to focus on his own work that evening, Rick found that he had a surprising difficulty recovering from the embers. They hadn't been intense enough to deal serious damage to him, yet the ache persisted for hours. Worse, his defensive core and even the dark blood kettle were struggling to adapt to them. Whatever the attack was, it seemed it was too well constructed for him to easily build defenses against it. For the first week of the showdown, Rick essentially didn't go outside, just focusing on establishing his new Lucors. He eventually managed to start the ranged defense corps, and he layered more lucrum onto the sensory corps. But when it came time for him to participate in an event, H forbade him from using the Triune Golden Spheres at all, saying they were still too fragile. So Rick went up against the best in the world with nothing but his base cores. He barely lasted a minute, yet he was proud of his defenses. Reports of the uniqueness of New Zealand's techniques proved mostly true, yet he didn't fall apart at the first blows. If he'd had his full capabilities, he was sure that he would have done better. Having played his role, he examined the Triune Golden Spheres carefully and then settled in to work. Triune Golden Spheres, 27,950. Defensive Sphere, 20,250. Absorption Sphere, 1,200. Sensory Sphere, 6,500. That afternoon, when H entered, he thrust something forward irritably.
"Did you receive a care package? I thought you didn't have family aside from your sister."
"Oh, that must be from Lisa." Rick hopped up, far faster than he would have wanted to admit. The package was indeed from Branton, though it was labeled with a business address. When he took off the outer wrapping, he discovered a simple box that contained multiple cans of serum and a few smaller boxes.
"Other supplements?"
H regarded the aluminum cans as if the element of aluminum had murdered his family.
"Is all the lucrum we're pouring into you not enough? You do realize how close you're cutting it to becoming a power addict, right?"
"This is just serum, not elixir." Rick opened up a can and took a sip. It was everything he remembered and more. The mint flavor was just a bit sweeter, and he felt the refreshment tingling through him almost immediately. Smiling, Rick handed another can to H.
"Try it. If you can honestly tell me that in your professional opinion this will ruin me, I'll reconsider."
H took the can with an expression of distaste and seemed even less pleased to crack open the top. When he took a sip, his face was completely neutral for several long seconds. His grunt of approval came with extreme displeasure.
"So it's fine?" Rick asked.
H set the can down, grumbling under his breath.
"It's ably crafted serum. Warriors shouldn't need serum. Nothing but a low-cost alternative for those who can't afford Philosopher's Elixir. But if you're going to drink it, you could do worse than this."
"I told you, she's a professional." Rick eagerly began finishing off the can, but he regarded H between sips.
"So what are we doing for today's lesson?" "You might be barely adequate when it comes to the core techniques, but you need to start using them together. So today, we use this."
H held up a strip of cloth that Rick recognized as a blindfold.
"And if you make a single childish joke, I'll just leave."
Rick held his tongue and put on the blindfold. He knew what was coming next, but that actually made him more anxious. All he could do was stand in the center of the room and do his best to defend against the embers flying at him from all directions. For several minutes, that meant fumbling blindly while the blazing pieces of aura burned into him. In theory, he could use his sensory lucor to sense the incoming attacks, then absorb them with his ranged lucor. In practice, it was nothing like that. Being able to sense large-scale lucrum anomalies was nothing like being able to pinpoint the direction and angle of an attack in a single second. Even when he felt it approach, he was usually wrong about the direction. And even if everything else miraculously went well, it was difficult to use the final lucor with so much else on his mind. He saw why H had started him with juggling. That didn't stop him from still being thrown into the fire. When he was too burned to keep training, Rick tugged off the blindfold and dropped into a seated position.
"So, is this technique useless unless I see an attack coming?" he asked. "Because there are plenty of people out there faster than me, and some techniques can literally travel at the speed of light." "When you fully master the technique, it will absorb everything that gets near you."
H shook his head slowly.
"The Midas Foundation would still be more idiot-friendly, but I knew you would need something that worked automatically. But you're not there yet."
"Wait a minute. If the final version will absorb everything that gets close, why am I training so hard on using it directionally?" H scoffed.
You think this is some mythical technique that will just magically absorb any attack whatsoever? Of course not. It's made of lucrum and aura, so it can be broken by lucrum or aura. When you run into someone truly strong, you'll want to have mastered every component of the technique. I figured as much.
Rick rubbed his shoulder where one ember had burned particularly deep. But that actually had me wondering. We're investing a lot of time and lucrum into something that's essentially just another defense. I assume that it's better specialized to deal with ranged attacks, or there'd be no point. But what if we just poured everything into defense? How much could I endure?
It wouldn't be the worst strategy in the world. You've seen that defense counts for a lot, but it wouldn't be the best either. Do you think that you're going to have more lucrum invested than every opponent you'll ever face in your life?
Obviously not. So what's the advantage?
The advantage is the failure state. This specialized lucor won't absorb everything, but some of what it can't absorb, it could redirect away from you. And if it's overloaded, the sphere will collapse without harming you. Much, anyway. If your oversized defensive core fails, those attacks are taking a toll on your body.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Rick lifted the ranged sphere and floated it around his palm. If you're giving out secrets that you've been withholding for no reason...
The reason is not wanting to overload your thuggish mind.
Then why not explain what I actually do with all this energy the lucor absorbs? I've already tried absorbing it into myself, and that doesn't work at all. Can it be thrown back at my opponent?
That is actually a weakness of the Triune Golden Spheres.
H hesitated, which was so uncharacteristic for him that Rick narrowed his eyes.
There are techniques that can absorb and return attacks, yes, but they tend to require extreme focus, so they couldn't be built into a compound technique like this. Aura attacks you absorb are converted to pure force, then released when the sphere starts to fail.
What, creating a shockwave all around me? Rick wasn't sure, but he thought he was getting a lot better at the fundamental construction of lucors. He was glad to see H nod without throwing in any insults.
Correct. It's a desperation move, but it would only appear when you're desperate. And most importantly, it works automatically. So once your mind is capable of handling the full Triune Golden Spheres at once...
I have multiple layers of defenses all working subconsciously, Rick finished. That makes sense. It's a brilliant choice, really. What was so much better about the Midas Foundation?
Bah, you snubbed it, so why do you care? Get up, there's more training to be done.
Over the coming weeks, Rick managed to slowly utilize the full technique. By now, juggling with the resistance spheres was easy, which made it effortless to rotate the Triune Golden Spheres within him. He was still mentally focusing on each one and switching as they were necessary, but he thought he was getting closer. Sometimes, when an attack came at him from behind, he absorbed it without thinking, without even being aware that he'd noticed it. Still, doing it in training was different from doing it in reality. H enrolled him in several less competitive events and even had him help with the qualifying rounds for new contestants. Rick earned no seals and didn't even win any victories, but that was never the point. His only goal was to use the Triune Golden Spheres in actual combat, and through painful mistakes, he was growing used to it. Yet even though Rick met a huge number of competitors during all the events, he barely remembered any of them. Most of them would fail, and even those who were inducted into the showdown would probably participate in different events. Anyone local to New Zealand, he wouldn't have a chance to see again for years, so it felt pointless to get to know them. Unfortunately, that was true of most people he met. Traveling the world while having only temporary acquaintances struck Rick as sad, and he often found himself falling back on familiar relationships. Melissa was busy, but their texts gave him life. He enjoyed talking to Lisa, though she seemed even more formal and guarded than before. If she needed that distance, he wouldn't argue. Given a few extra hours, Rick reached out a little further. He got in touch with Uncle Frank, which was a fun conversation, and arranged for a future visit. Not all the details were certain, but it seemed that everyone could be in Vietnam at the same time. Beyond that, he made contact with Adsela and Wemelot again, only to find out that they'd been following his exploits. Finally, he sent a couple emails to Damien, though he didn't get any response. The trip to Siberia was getting closer, so Rick began to pack his things. It didn't take long, as he'd barely moved out of his suitcase. But while sorting through the new training items and finding a place for Lisa's box of serum, his bike chip fell out. Rick ran his fingers over the dark chip, realizing how long it had been since he'd gone biking. Even though he went everywhere by taxi or private vehicle now, he missed it. As they ran out of training time, Rick looked at the Triune Golden Spheres one more time and was surprised by how much progress he'd made. Triune Golden Spheres, 53,750. Defensive Sphere, 25,000. Absorption Sphere, 11,250. Sensory Sphere, 17,500. Just over 25,000 lucrum gained. That was a huge advancement, almost like getting a birthright core. Yet in a strange way, despite all the pain and suffering he'd gone through for them, they didn't feel his. The crystal spheres floated in his lucrimasole, yes, but they didn't feel part of him like his true lucores. Maybe that would change as he grew used to the technique, but it left him with an odd dissatisfaction that no amount of success could shake. On their very last day, H invited him outside the training complex, and they sparred atop a gorgeous mountain range. It wasn't a very intense sparring match, and H didn't use his embers, so it was actually relaxing. Rick enjoyed himself, letting his expanded senses slide over the mountains all around him as they fought. It did become more intense in the end, a fierce hand-to-hand bout atop a rocky outcropping. Rick was surprised to find that he was actually winning, and he wasn't sure that H was holding back. Of course, if the other man was fighting seriously, he would have stayed at a distance and used embers, but still. His strength matching up to his mentor's weakness was no small thing. For the first time in his life, Rick actually felt strong. When they finished, he sat down on the edge and looked out over the rolling landscape. H stood nearby, characteristically silent, and Rick eventually decided he had to ask. Why end like this? You haven't been much for relaxation before. You could use a break. H didn't criticize like usual, instead staring over the horizon with a strange expression. Because tomorrow, we go to Siberia. Chapter 24. Entering Siberia. After following the showdown through four different countries, Rick thought that he knew how everything went. For all the differences in culture and climate, the modern world had flattened the process of traveling. They always flew into a major city, their showdown cards allowing them to skip customs, and went straight to a training facility. Not so in Siberia. Rick had ignored their flight path to focus on training the Triune Golden Spheres when warning suddenly blared from the cockpit. He leapt to his feet automatically, but saw H shake his head. A voice announced some sort of warning in what Rick assumed was Russian, then their helicopter changed direction and began heading down.
The Greater Siberian Domain has excellent border security, H explained. It's just a bit blunt about everything. They need to approve our entry and give us government-issued identification. Just cooperate, and it will all be over quickly.
Imagining cavity searches, Rick did his best not to get too concerned as they landed. When they stepped out of the helicopter, it appeared to be in a desolate snowfield with nothing but a small airport nearby. Several soldiers awaited them, wearing military uniforms with white camouflage and more fur than normal. The leader stepped forward and examined them skeptically.
Show them, yes? That way.
His accent was thick, but the finger stabbing toward one of the buildings was clear enough. As they walked, surrounded by a military escort, Rick shifted closer to H.
Surely they can't do this for everyone. Obviously not, though the normal borders are tight as well.
One of the soldiers glowered at them, but talking must be allowed because H glared right back at her, then continued.
But anyone who is rated as over a certain threat level is treated differently. As showdown participants, we're automatically on that list. I took this route to get us through faster.
As they walked, the biting cold began to get through even Rick's defensive cores, but fortunately, they were escorted directly into the building. He hadn't realized how loud the wind had been until it was suddenly gone, the silence within the building surreal. Within, he saw a gate that reminded him of an airport terminal with a severe-looking man awaiting them on the other side of ether-reinforced glass. Or maybe that was a friendly expression for Siberia. H led them forward and nudged Rick to get out his card. After examining their identification, however, the man only grunted and held out a hand.
Lucrem portfolios?
Rick started to get out his phone, only to have the man shake his head severely. Meanwhile, H had revealed a circular metal plate that was accepted by a scanner. When Rick looked toward H for explanation, he just nodded back to the official.
Siberia does not acknowledge the measurements or rankings of outside nations, the official said flatly.
He regarded Rick with pale eyes, then pointed toward a different line.
You must be evaluated and granted an official measurement.
That seemed harmless enough to cooperate with, so Rick nodded and followed his instructions. Another soldier standing on guard opened a gate for him, allowing him to step into another room. There was a large metal panel on the floor, with several metal arms arcing around it, reminding him of some sort of standing dental chair. A technician spoke to him in Russian, but the gesture was clear enough. Rick went to stand in the center, where he saw two symbols for feet. Immediately, the mechanical arms began to move around him, some revealing ends that looked uncomfortably stabby, but none got close to him. He could feel some technique poking at his lucrimasole, based on aura, but not quite an attack. His instinct was still to try to absorb it, but he doubted that would be well received.
Good. Now brace self. Defensive cores.
The instructions came a moment before a tall metal bar began emitting blinding red light. Rick instinctively raised both his defenses as he felt the light burn into him. This one could well have been an attack for most, though it wasn't enough to scathe him. He could only hope they had modulated its strength based on their first measurements. Then it seemed he was done. Rick was ushered through a different door back into the main line, where he was glad to see H for once. There he filled out a bit of paperwork, thankfully in English, and was then handed a metal circle similar to the one he had seen before. It had his name and an ID number printed directly into the metal, but he was more interested in the symbols at the center. It was clearly the Siberian equivalent of the American Ether Tier system. Rick had vaguely known that the same ratings agencies didn't operate for the whole world, but it hadn't been relevant until that point. This system was rather blunt. Strength, 79,000. Rank, junior fighter. Affiliation, showdown guest, third class. Though the new system immediately interested him, Rick decided that it would just be a distraction. It didn't matter how they measured his strength, only what he could do. The third-class designation made him wonder about the others, but it was all useless without anything to compare. Fortunately, the whole process wasn't drawn out, and they were soon escorted out of the other side of the building, then back to their helicopter. H was already finished and waiting, saying a few words to the soldiers before gesturing for him to follow. No one came after them as they walked the final distance to the helicopter, though Rick couldn't stop himself from looking back.
They'll just let us go now? They don't like to waste time in Siberia.
H made a gesture to lower the ramp, then glanced down at him while they waited.
And they don't need to. Not having your identification badge is a major crime here, even for visitors. The badge itself has a unique ether signature built into it connected to your profile, so everyone will know who you are. And obviously, the government can track you.
Rick frowned.
No privacy. They don't really consider that a major value here.
In that case, I want to see your ID.
Why should I let you?
H turned away from him and walked up the ramp, which instantly began to retract, forcing Rick to scramble to enter. Once he was inside, however, he decided that he wouldn't be put off so easily. If the badges allowed anyone to access information, then H's badge wouldn't be private either. Rick tried to extend both his normal senses and his enhanced ones out toward the older man, but got nothing out of the ordinary. Yet with his new observation, Lucor, he sensed a faint thread tying him to his own badge. There must be another one connecting H. Yes, there it was. They appeared artificial, an element of technology as opposed to anything more spiritual. If that was the case, perhaps he needed to use his own badge. Getting it back out of his pocket, Rick pursued the connection, then focused toward H. It worked surprisingly quickly, and letters of aura appeared on the backside of his badge. Strength, 127,000. Rank, foreign trainer. Affiliation, showdown guest, second class. No name, though he assumed the government could get that information. Perhaps that was considered less important than a person's strength out here. Though Rick was intrigued by the difference in their rated strength, which wasn't as high as he expected, he reminded himself that it didn't really matter.
You figured it out.
He glanced over at him and then shook his head.
You've gained basic competence. That's obnoxious.
I expected the difference to be bigger, Rick said. I've kind of been assuming you were an immortal too, or at least close to one.
None of that is any of your business.
H sat down and folded his arms, glaring him into a seat across from him.
Now, 79,000 is not a terrible score, but it needs to be higher. This is where a demonic bond would have been extremely useful.
They count that as part of the number.
Everything is part of the number, even equipment. What matters here is efficacy.
Rick nodded acceptance, but H clearly wasn't done.
As I said, I'm not going to force a bond on you, and I've been patient because you've avoided embarrassing yourself too badly. Well, here, a few tricks won't cut it. You'd better not have been lying about having some plan to get a better bond, or you're not getting entered into any events.
I'll do what I can. Rick had been avoiding thinking about the subject, or focusing solely on Buftgage and Yithzel. But though he trusted the two demons, he didn't expect them to ever present him with some amazing combat bond. Hopefully, they could at least lead him to something that would appease H.
Entry into the demon realm isn't too difficult here, due to the number of fusions, but it's highly restricted. I'll set something up for you as soon as possible. Thanks.
Trying to distract himself from all the other thoughts, Rick tried to refocus. I assume we'll be in a training center as always, but we'll still see Siberian culture. Anything I need to know?
Don't start any fights. If you think the limits on killing are lax in the U.S., you haven't seen anything.
H jabbed a finger at the badge still held in his hands.
Some would argue there's no rule of law here, just rule of affiliations. Fortunately, the showdown is internationally respected. It won't earn you respect, but it will earn you a bit of protection.
That's better than it could be. It seems like this would be a terrible place to start a showdown career.
Only idiots send their trainees here first. Some don't let them come to Siberia until a full year of events, but your first few months have been adequate. You shouldn't die anyway.
Rick took a deep breath, his attempt at a distraction having utterly failed.
Is getting a demonic bond here a mistake, then? Are they going to just take my soul by force? No, the Siberian Demon Corps are international agencies. Cutthroat, but that's par for the course. Read the fine print, and you'll live.
H regarded him sternly.
Does that mean you're going to actually go through with this instead of being a racist coward again?
The only response Rick had was to shake his head. It seemed like he didn't have a choice, yet he was banking heavily on Buftgage and Yithzel finding a good path for him. Without any contact with them, he was actually nervous. Could they survive in an environment like this one? If he had sent them to their deaths. As Rick stewed in his thoughts, the helicopter took them deep into Siberia.